Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 389 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Janet Falk. Now, Janet was on the program way back in episode 199, which was about 4 years ago, just about 200 episodes ago, 4 years ago. And we talked a lot about what is her primary focus, and that is public relations for law firms and how they can get the news stories that they crave to help grow their business. But today we're going to talk about another aspect of the services that she provides, and that's marketing communication services. And specifically, we're going to address 25 things you should do to get the most out of the next conference you go to, whether it's a legal conference or a bar association meeting, or some other type of public event where you're going to be in and around people. And she's got a couple of really great, two of all the points are good. And there's a couple that really blew me away that I think are completely actionable and really relevant for us as solo practitioners. So without any further delay, here once again is Janet Falk. Janet Falk, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, it's terrific to have you back with us again, Janet. For our audience members who may not remember your name, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Certainly. I'm a public relations and marketing communications professional, and I have more than 30 years experience working in this area. I have worked with law firms, Wall Street firms, nonprofits, consultants, and business owners. And what I do for them is several things. One is I introduce them to reporters so that they can be quoted in news stories. And that way they can attract new clients, keep in touch with their current clients, maybe get back and reconnect with their lapsed clients. They can attract new employees who want to work for that hot firm that's always in the news. And they can be top of mind with their referral sources. But before I introduce one of my clients to a reporter, I want to make sure that their LinkedIn profile and their website are up to snuff and that they focus not on the individual, but on the client. So there's a lot of you and not a lot of we and I. Another thing that I do is I help people to publish articles in either professional journals, like a legal journal or a legal newspaper, or in industry publications. And finally, I help them with their newsletters.
Well, it's a broad spectrum of services that you offer. When you were previously on our show, we talked pretty much exclusively about the PR and how to grow your law firm, you know, using that as one of the tools. Now, you know, that was in the before times. 4 years ago was, you know, pre-COVID. And so I'm just a little curious before we get too far down the road here. What is your perception of how and to what degree public relations has changed post-COVID in comparison?
Well, one has to point, of course, to the digital sphere, because people are sourcing information from different places online. So you want to make sure that you are present in those places where people are looking. That means you want to be contributing to posts on LinkedIn, and you want to be contributing to online newsletters and commenting to what other people are saying. And I think that this speaks to the idea that we are all dealing with people who we never met and who we're not going to meet and who we're only seeing through virtual handshakes, virtual meetings, email correspondence, and the occasional phone call. So there's certainly been diminished activity in the, you know, face-to-face in real life sphere. But that doesn't mean that, we should shy away from it, you know.
No.
That we should look for more opportunities where we can be connecting with others. And so activity is to put you in front of the people that you want to meet and have know about you so that you can proceed to that next face-to-face meeting.
Well, I would argue that to some degree, the opportunities have been expanded. They're different than they were, you know, pre-COVID, and or as I like to say, the before times. But to some degree, I think they're expanded because, as you said, the digital sphere becoming ever more commonplace as a source of information and where people are, you know, doing their business. Back in the day, the public relation coup was if you could get your name mentioned in the newspaper or on the local TV station. And while that's still a possibility, I think it's somewhat diminished in the world today because newspapers and local TV are having their own challenges. But the digital world continues to expand at a dramatic rate. And so I think it's just you're looking in a different place. You're addressing a different, source.
Right. And I would point out also, Neil, that it's not one and done. That is, when you get quoted in a news article or when you yourself publish a newsworthy article in a legal publication or an industry publication, then you have to be sharing it across these digital platforms because not everybody reads the, New York Law Journal or, law.com on a daily basis. So you want to make sure that you are promoting whatever it is that you said so that it will get wider distribution.
Well, one of the other post-apocalyptic responses that we have seen recently is the return of the legal conference. I will admit that I was a conference junkie in the before times. I attended a lot of conferences, probably six or seven a year, and thoroughly enjoyed doing so. And then we went through this long hiatus where nobody was even hosting a conference, and there wasn't any conferences to go to. And now the nature of conferences have changed. They're coming back, and more and more legal conferences are being held. And almost all of them these days have a virtual aspect to them as well. And so one of the things we wanted to talk today about is your tips for how to prepare for and get the maximum use out of attending a conference. Now, you have a webinar that you've done and a couple of opportunities coming up that people in the newsletter that people might want to tap into. Let's go ahead and mention those now before we get into the actual tips.
Okay. So I'm going to be giving a webinar on October 17th through PLI. I will confess it's a little pricey. It's $349, but if you subscribe, then, you can see it for free.
Sure.
And I have published a two-part series of articles on this topic, 25 tips to prepare for your next conference in PLI's Chronicle, which is available on the PLI website. This whole topic arose because I was planning to attend an annual event run by the group Women Owned Law, which is for women who are partners at firms or who have their own firm or a solo practice, and women-owned businesses like myself that serve the legal market. In anticipation of this event, I wrote an article, which was then 22 tips. to prepare for your next conference so that, you know, those attending the conference, the symposium, would be able to make the most of the opportunity. And I've since expanded it. And finally, this is going to be an ebook, which will be available on my website.
Well, terrific. We're looking forward to promoting the publication of the ebook in particular on your website for our listeners to kind of tap into. I know that the list is kind of organized and the content organized around what to do before, what to do during, and what to do after the conference. So let's talk about, you know, a couple of things in that order, and let's, you know, see where that takes us. So I'm getting ready to attend the conference. You know, booked my ticket and booked my hotel. I'm excited. I've, you know, been on the website. I've looked at the list of speakers. There's enough there to coax me out of my living room and onto a plane. What should I be doing to get ready to maximize my experience at a conference?
Okay. As important as the speakers are, to me, what's most important are the conversations that you have with the other attendees who are at the conference. So what I encourage people to do is to peruse the membership directory, which is probably online. And you can sort it in a variety of ways. Say you're going to a bar association meeting. You can sort it by practice area. You can sort it by geography. You can sort it by people who graduated from the same law school as you, or people who are alumni of some big law firm like you. And get out a pen or get out your email and write to these people and say, I noticed that we share this common characteristics. You know, we both work in, you know, elder law, or we both live in the Washington area. And I'm looking forward to going to this conference, and I hope we'll be able to meet there. So this way, you are already introducing yourself and setting goals for yourself to build on your network. And you are tapping into that commonality, whether it's a same practice or maybe it's an aligned practice, right? If you're a residential real estate attorney, maybe you want to be meeting with you know, people who handle matrimonial law, because oftentimes in a divorce, then, you know, there's an asset, a house that has to be disposed of. So read the membership directory online and sort out who might be good contacts for you because they're in an aligned practice or a similar practice or from your local area, or, you know, had an experience similar to yours by going to the same law school or working for a similar firm. I have to tell you that I did this. I found someone who I had met 10 years ago. And I reconnected with her, and she became a client. We had a conversation, yeah. And she became a client. So I think people overlook the fact that they have these commonalities with the other members.
Yeah, and what I hear that's different or unique is that this is a specific proactive activity that you do ahead of time. I mean, I know a lot of folks, myself included, and I'm just as guilty. If I'm going to, say, ClioCon, one of my favorite conferences, although I missed the one in Nashville this year, I'm beating myself up for that. However, a lot of times, you know, I'll go on social media and say, all right, I'm heading to ClioCon. Who's going? Who can I hook up with and meet? And kind of a non-specific broadcast using social media tools. But that's not as effective as what you're suggesting. It's not as directed.
Exactly. And this person knows that they're not getting a mass email. I mean, let's face right. it. When you go to a conference and the vendors and the sponsors have gotten the list of the registrants, they send, you know, emails in advance, come to our booth, meeting. Yeah. But the person getting this email from you knows that you have this commonality. Right, you have a shared practice or a similar background or are located in the same area. And so they know that this is a personal connection.
Back in the day, when I used to attend more conferences, I would always make sure that I had a pocket full of business cards. And, you know, in my case, I'd have two sets of business cards, one for my law practice and one for the podcast here. I kind of got away from business cards in part because I didn't like collecting them from others, and I got lazy handing them out. But should I be thinking about, you know, returning to the use of a business card or something more specific, something more informative? Do you have some suggestions along those lines?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, Neil. You know, I use business cards, but I also have developed a business card size card, and it has four panels. So on the front panel, it says, five fast tips for a media phone interview. And it has my logo, it has my name and my website URL. Then you
That's like the headline, yeah.
Right. Then you open up the card, and inside are the five fast tips. Now, the first one is, the reporter is not your friend. If you don't want to see it in the news story, don't say it. And then the back of the card.
Needs to be repeated.
Yeah, right. And then the back of the card has my phone number, my email address. It says, do you want to practice? You know, this is how you can contact me. And it has a QR code so that you can take a picture of the QR code. It'll open up on my newsletter subscription page so that you can continue to be in touch with me. Now, I find that giving away this little bit of information and making it accessible in a card that's the size of a business card, people can keep this five fast tips for a media phone interview in their wallet or on their desk, so that when they do get that unexpected call from a reporter, they will have the sense to take a pause, get the reporter's contact information, look at the tips, and then call the reporter back. And I think that there are a lot of tips that anyone, regardless of their practice, can give away in this sense. You know, I know someone who does white collar crime defense, and he has an app that you can have on your phone. And it's basically what to do when the FBI knocks on your door.
Oh, he's going to say, I mean, that's exactly what I would have characterized
that. Right.
How brilliant.
And, you know, personal injury attorneys also, you know, what to do if you're in this kind of accident, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, and you could be giving away information about how vital it is or questions you should be asking yourself about your estate and your elder care planning and so on. So I think that a lot of people would do well to have either in addition to or as a substitute for a business card, to have this business card sized item that they can give away. But if you don't want to give away that kind of information, I mean, Neil, everyone needs a pen. Everyone needs a pen.
Well,
and you can put contact information and something about your slogan or your firm, what is your practice area focused on, and everyone needs a pen.
I really think the business card product, business card sized product, is really genius, because regardless of your practice area, we can all come up with something to include on the inside that's useful information to the kind of people who want to reach as client. You know, I remember in the business card heyday, the idea was to make your business card memorable, either in appearance or, you know, have your picture on it. I remember people who had business cards that were vertical or just something to make them stand out in the crowd. This is really taking that to the next level, because not only is it something different, this is much more than just contact information. This is content, the content that you wish prospective clients, or else you can have sets made up for what you hand out to prospective referral sources or colleagues in the practice. And then the other part of this that I really like, Janet, is on the back having the QR code. Now, in your case, it takes them to the membership page or the sign-up page for your newsletter, but you can have a QR code that takes you anywhere onto your firm's website. And this is a way of making the bridge between that tangible product that you hold in your hand and the digital world that we all live in, and making it seamless, The QR code is brilliant. I don't have to type in your website information. And I think it's really a helpful tip.
No, I'm so glad you like it, Neil. I want to point out one more thing, which is that it's very easy to share with the next person. You can give it to a family member. You can give it to a boss. You can give it to an employee. You can give it to anyone in your circle.
For sure. Absolutely.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's five or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
All right, so now we're at the conference. All right, we've done all our preparation. We've got our branded item, in our hands, and we're attending the conference. You know, for me, I've always found that while I enjoy the speakers, it's the time in between and it's the social functions afterwards that I got the most value out of. Not to say that I didn't enjoy the speakers, I absolutely did, but it's all the other stuff to me that makes a conference worthwhile. What are some of the things I should be doing to maximize my effectiveness at the conference itself?
Okay, so I would encourage people to turn off their phone and to turn off their Apple Watch or whatever digital watch they have and focus on being there in the moment. You may be randomly seated with someone and, you know, strike up conversation with them. You know, they're there for the same reason you are, which is to learn what's the latest and greatest in the industry and to network with more people. So, you know, be alert to opportunities to have conversations with your seatmate. Now, when it comes to meals, you know, at breakfast, I like to sit with people that I already know because breakfast is very fast. Everyone wants to just get in and get out and go to the session. So you can have very quick conversations with the people that you already know. Whereas lunch is a more extended conversation. And so at lunchtime, I like to sit with people that I don't know so that I can develop new relationships. I don't know why people stick to members of their firm who live in a different office. You know, if you're from the Washington office and they're from Chicago or San Francisco, you can talk to them anytime, really. You don't have to meet them in St. Louis just because that's where the conference is taking place. So I would encourage people to look for informal conversations and networking opportunities. And when you're doing that, you want to keep track of what it is that you talked about with these people. So if they have given you a business card, then write down whatever it is that you talked about. Did you promise them that you would introduce them to someone else? Did you offer them an article that you had written? Did you invite them to subscribe to your newsletter and you're going to send them the current issue so they can decide that they want to subscribe? You have to keep track of what it is that you discussed in these informal conversations. Now, here's an idea that I don't think enough people pursue, and that is a lot of times when there's a big session, they break out into smaller discussion groups. And so you're in this breakout room and everybody's looking around, who's in charge? So I'll tell you, Neil, you be in charge. Say, I'm going to be in charge and, you know, I'm going to be the secretary and I'm going to, you know, invite other people to comment. You know, my name is Neil Tyra. I have a practice in, you know, elder law and estate planning and so on. And so let's get started. So everyone is going to be sharing their ideas in the breakout room and so on. You're going to be taking your notes. And then when you reconvene back in the big room, you're going to stand up and say, you know, I'm from group C and what we talked about was X, Y, and Z. And in particular, I want to highlight, you know, Pat Wilson, who mentioned whatever it is that was so interesting. So you're now going to stand up in that big room. Everybody's going to see you. Everybody's going to know that you are sharing the insights of whatever went on in group C. So don't shy away from that opportunity to stand up in front of the whole audience and talk about what went on in the breakout room. And one last thing, we're all traveling with our cell phones. We should be taking selfies with other people that we meet. And then we can share them with those people after the conference. It's a wonderful opportunity to reconnect with someone and say, you know, I really enjoyed our conversation about, you know, elder law, dealing with people who have dementia and so on. And here's a photo that I took with, you know, with you and your colleague, you know, let's keep in touch. So those are some things that you can be thinking about, having more informal conversations, keeping track of your conversations, offering introductions or offering additional materials, standing up to be the leader of the breakout room discussion and report back to the main group, and take a few selfies with the people that you meet so that you will have a reason to reconnect with them.
I had a built-in kind of advantage to some of the conferences that I attended because being the host of a podcast gives me a natural segue to be able to work with the speakers, for instance. And so I would use the speaker list and mine that list for potential guests to come on the podcast. But you can do a similar thing with the people that you meet as attendees. Perhaps they have an interesting story. But like, I guess my question to you is then, for other folks who don't have a podcast, how can we interact with the speaker in a direct way that works to the speaker's benefit and to theirs as well?
Okay. What I suggest is you look at the speaker and their background and the topic that they've announced and get in touch with them. And say, you know, I'm really looking forward to your presentation. I wonder if you're going to touch on X point. And by the way, is there a question that you would like someone to ask during the course of the Q&A session after your presentation? So I have a client who says that she loves it when people get in touch with her before the conference and ask her if she's going to talk about X, because that helps her to shape her remark. And it makes her remarks more responsive to the interest of the attendees. Now, the idea of planting a question. A lot of times you want to talk about something, but it just didn't fit into the boundaries of what it was that that you're discussing in your remarks. So if you plant a question, then you can be seen in a very positive way. You're talking about something that everybody knows is important. You're being responsive to the questioner, and you're providing additional information. So I would encourage you to offer to the speaker, do you want me to ask a question? And then you can work with the speaker and team up with them. Then what happens? At the end of the session, when there's a mad rush up to the front of the room and everybody wants to get the speaker's card and say something to them and so on, you can hang back. And then you can say, you know, Neil or Pat, you know, I really enjoyed your remarks. I thought you did a great job answering the question, and I want to be able to keep in touch with you. Because the speaker already knows you, and they're counting on you to ask them that question so that they can focus on this additional topic. So that's a little bit of before preparation that people can be doing to team up with the speaker.
And let's take that selfie now.
Right.
There's a subtlety to that, which I just want to drill down on a little bit. You know, we've all been to those conferences where they open the floor up to questions and somebody, you know, gets up to pose a question, and it's really an advertisement for them.
Right.
They want the speaker in the audience to know who they are and why they're there. And sometimes the introduction to the question, in the audience, you're out there saying, can you just get to the damn point? it happens way too many times. I really, really like the idea of coordinating with the speaker and asking the speaker, is there a question you want me to answer? That's a subtlety, or ask. That's a subtlety that I want to make sure we understand and it's clear, because then, as you said, you're partnering with the speaker. You're helping them either drill down into an aspect of their presentation, or you know, bring in a part that wasn't necessarily addressed in the main discussion, but now can be fleshed out a little bit in the response to the question. I think that really makes for an interesting connection, and you know, has a lot of potential. I think it's a brilliant suggestion.
Yeah, I'll tell you who taught that to me. Was Arthur Levitt, former chairman of the SEC from 1993 to 2001. He, at the time I was working for a Wall Street company, and he would speak all the time, and he would ask us to plant questions so that he could make a point addressing the Wall Street community and the reporters covering the Wall Street community.
So now you've gone
another way. There's another way that you can do that. And, you know, if you are the speaker, you can say, I didn't have time to talk about this, but oftentimes people ask me.
Yes.
And so, because sometimes when you give a presentation, there's dead air and nobody asks the question right away.
Yeah.
So this way you can open the floor, and certainly planting the question opens the floor.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I really do. I love that idea. So now we've done all the prep work. We've had a great time at the conference. We've done our networking. We've met people who've taken selfies, handed out our branded products. Now comes the real work, I suspect. This is where the payoff really materializes, and that's in the follow-up. Is that right?
Correct.
But what should we be doing?
Yeah, so I have a template that I use where you can just fill in the blanks for, you know, for whatever is your particular interest. You could say, you know, it was great meeting you at the such and such conference. You may recall we discussed X and Y. As a follow-up, I mentioned an article, a podcast, a newsletter, a colleague. You know, if you're not already acquainted, let me introduce you to this colleague, and so on. You know, here's my my newsletter if you're interested, or my blog if you're interested. You can subscribe. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being in touch with you. Let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can be in touch going forward. And, you know, and this is a letter that can be customized with just putting in a few remarks into these holes that I've indicated so that you can be following up. And one thing that I recommend is when you have your out of office email and you say, you know, I'm going to be out of the office, I'm going to this conference from Monday to Thursday. Well, I would make it Monday to Friday, because when you come back from the conference, you're going to need that extra day to go through everything that's accumulated while you were out of the office and to conduct your follow-up activities. But it's not just this one email that you're following up and sending whatever it is that you promised them and whatever photo you took with them. You want to mark your calendar, however you do it in your CRM or whatever calendar you keep, so that you follow up with them a second time. Just because you had one conversation, it's not one and done. You know, if they're really someone that you want to cultivate, then you have to make a plan so that you will follow up with them a second time. And that's, I think, where people fall down.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a conference, did some prep work, had a great time, collected a lot of information. And then the follow-up was haphazard. And so you really lose all the benefits that you were hoping to gain, you know, by not taking action. I think for a lot of attorneys, what some of the concern is that, man, it sounds like a lot of work. And I'm not sure that I can connect it or identify this level of work with the bottom line. I mean, I guess everybody's looking for that relationship. I would suggest that not doing it is fundamentally hurting your bottom line, because you're missing the opportunity that's right in front of your face.
Right, right. So another client of mine has this process, and that is when she meets someone at a conference, she writes on the back of the card whatever it is that she promised them. And then she takes a photo of the card and of the notation on the back, and she sends it to her virtual assistant so that the virtual assistant handles the follow-up. And the letter, you know, the email is just going to say, You know, Tom, great talking to you. Here's the material that we discussed. Let's continue to be in touch. And so it comes from the virtual assistant through the attorney's email. And, you know, and it's all taken care of. You don't have to think about it anymore. What a system. You could hire a virtual assistant for just a day to do this kind of thing for you.
You anticipated my question there, because there are a lot of law firms doing exactly that, turning over this relationship management process, you know, the nuts and bolts of following up on a scheduled basis via email, scheduling a get reacquainted Zoom call, maybe scheduling a coffee meeting or you know, lunch or dinner with the contact. All of that is legwork, that follow-up legwork that needs to be done. And I know a lot of firms that have turned that over to a virtual assistant. It's a perfect opportunity to employ that type of a resource to get that job taken care of, because it is work. It is time consuming. It's probably not the best use of an attorney's time to do all that work. The end result will be, but right, not necessarily the procedural aspect of it. So I think that's a really good point. Beyond LinkedIn, tell me a little bit about how you might use social media as a follow-up tool.
You have to find out where that person is active on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter X or whatever. And, you know, mm-hmm. And if that's where you want to be, because that's where they are, then that's where you should be as well. But I don't recommend that as a steady process, that you should be on every social media platform possible. You have to decide for yourself where your audience is and be active on that platform.
I have to confess that while I understand completely the value of LinkedIn and how, you know, most attorneys use it, it's never gotten real traction with me. It's always an afterthought. I'm on other social channels much more than LinkedIn, and I'm probably an outcast mm-hmm. and an outlier in that regard.
Well, I have a story about that. I was taking a business management course with this fellow named Michael. And one day I got an email from someone named Art. And so I looked up Art and I saw that he and Michael were connected on LinkedIn. And Art was an entrepreneur in the technology space, something that I really don't do very much work in. So I asked Michael, who is this fellow Art? And he said, I met him in a softball league. He's now on his third company. So I thought, okay, there's something going on here. Now, how did Art find me? Art was looking for a public relations professional in New York, and he saw that I was connected to Michael, and that was good enough for him. Art became my client.
Yeah. I need to pay more attention to that, because there's tons of stories just like that. And I have a good friend who's going through a job search right now, and she's finding tremendous value in using her LinkedIn resources. And like I said, I have to confess, I haven't really been able to make it work for me, but that's probably more me than anything else.
I would think about it in this way, Neil, and that is, you can search in LinkedIn for a certain kind of person, and then you can look for connections of. So right. You could look for, entrepreneurs or, whatever, and you could see connections of Janet Falk, and then you'll see who I know. And now my belief is that everyone knows someone worth knowing. And you don't know who stands in another person's circle until you look them up on LinkedIn. I had a conversation with a woman who is a non-practicing attorney in Rochester, and she said, I think you should get in touch with this Kathy woman. And I looked up Kathy. We have 12 mutual connections among very highly networked people. But I don't think Kathy is the right person for me. But in any event, you don't know who stands in another person's circle. And you can ask that person, I see that you're connected with Pat Wilson. Could you introduce me to that person? And if the person has a viable connection, then they'll say yes. Or if they don't have a viable connection, they'll say no, which is a long ago contact. I don't even know why I'm connected to that person. Right. And if you don't ask, you don't get. And believe me, there's a lot of golden contacts in there. They're in the membership directory, as we mentioned at the top of this discussion. And they're in your circles, and they're in your colleague circles.
Well, it's all very important, and I need to kick myself and my own backside to move that a little further down the road. Janet, this is wonderful having a chance to reconnect with you. Tell our audience how they can reach you and how they can take advantage of the ebook on this entire subject that you have coming out.
Certainly. So I am active on LinkedIn, as you might expect, and my website is my name, Janet, J-A-N-E-T, L for law, Falk, F is France, A-L-K, Janet, L for law, F-A-L-K.com. I have a lot of resources on my website, Neil, that are all my newsletters going back, 7 or 8 years, and I have a lot of samples. And I have a lot of templates, and I have some other ebooks that I have purchased. I have one ebook that's for sale. It's called Create and Monitor Your Marketing RBI, 5 Ways to Get Business. And that's $9.99. And this new ebook will be available shortly.
Terrific. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I do really appreciate you taking the time to come back and join us again on The Law Entrepreneur, and I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you so much, Neil. It was my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.